Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to The Other Side. Just a quick note. Today's episode is for grown-ups only, and probably want to switch to another episode if there are kids in the vicinity. Just wanted to let you know, I was not that long ago a parent of small kids, and I always appreciated these kind of disclaimers. So we always try to be cognizant of the little ones and let you know if there's some grown-up material on its way. So with that, I hope you enjoy the show. And now we go to The Other Side. Fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold and so glad to be with you today. And we're going to cover something today that I don't know. We've been doing the shows 15 years and I don't think we've done anything like this on the program before. So I think it's going to be very interesting. We're going to talk about a new book that is out. It is called Sex Shamans, True Stories of Sacred Sexuality and Awakening. Our guest is the author of said book, Kamala Devi McClure. She is a lead facilitator for the International School of Temple Arts, traveling the world teaching the spiritual sexual shamanic experience. A spokesperson for Tantra, polyamory, kink, and LGBTQ communities. Her family starred in Showtime's docuseries Polyamory, Married and Dating. She has also appeared on Dr. Drew, Tyra Banks, and in the award-winning documentary Sex Magic. She is the author of four books, and we're so glad to have her on the program. Kamala Devi, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
So, sex shamans. Somebody might say, well, what is it? What is a sex shaman? Now, I know this, you're the really the editor of the book is probably more accurate. And I think you have something like 20 contributors. But what is the definition of a sex shaman?
So people may have a sense of what a shaman is, and it might be, you know, accurate or not. But the idea that pops to mind often is like an ayahuasca ceremony or some kind of plant medicine, that someone who leads the tribe on a journey through going through ecstatic states, often altered by medicine. And a sex shaman, the medicine is sex. So instead of using substances to get into an altered state in order to go into revelation or oracle or healing, a sex shaman uses eros, kundalini, arousal, a desire in order to get into that altered state and, you know, all, and in effect do the same things, which is healing and channeling and divination.
Okay. Now, in terms of people looking at this, it may say, well, that sounds too wild for me. I'm not that wild. Or maybe, I know you talk about things like polyamory and things like that. And maybe some people say, well, I'm a monogamous person. Mm-hmm. So maybe this book isn't for me. Is this book for everybody?
Actually, I wouldn't say that it's for everybody. No.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. That's why I asked the question.
But monogamy versus polyamory, or, you know, whether you're queer or straight or trans, or it's not, you don't necessarily have to have any particular sexual identity or, you know, relationship style to access your own the power and the mysticism of your own arousal. So I think even if you're the most, you know, vanilla, inexperienced, or, you know, conservative sexual being, you've probably had an experience of orgasm that was wherein you felt a oneness or a reality dissolved for a moment, or you had a mystical experience, even if it was just a glimpse. So this is actually very human. Everybody has these transcendental experiences during sex. And this book talks about not only how to cultivate that more, but how to cultivate it as a spiritual path.
I want to talk about that more, the transcendental nature of sex. That, and some people will think, well, you know, that's just a chemical reaction. My body likes this. I release these endorphins and, you know, it's enjoyable or whatever. But it is your view that you connect to something greater. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so we are all here because of sex.
True. Absolutely true.
And I mean, just marvel on that for a moment. Like, you know, the seed and the egg comes together and a new human is born. Like that in and of itself is magic. I mean, it's so beyond our comprehensive. It's just, you know, at its core, sex is a alchemical process. It creates a new energy, whether it's a human being or, you know, a new experience, even the chemical experience. Maybe say, oh, it's serotonin and dopamine and, you know, it's this high. Well, that chemistry itself is alchemy. And are we using that just for pleasure? Or can we also use that for the healing of our bodies or the visioning of new culture or, you know, the rearranging the neuroplasticity of our own personality. So it's pretty, I mean, one could say, sure, this is just chemical, but even the chemists and the, you know, neuroscience will say, this is pretty deep stuff. The way the whole mind, you know, the brain lights up during orgasm and increases neuroplasticity. Like this is, you know, potent. Why just squander it on, you know, a stress release as opposed to actually cultivating something more, you know, aligned with your values?
Now, and I just want to put this out there and get your reaction to it and move on. Some people may see this material and say, and it's not me saying this, but I'm just saying some people may say, well, this is, you know, people who enjoy sex, which personally my feeling is, hey, consenting adults, go for it. You know, whatever floats your boat. That's fine with me. I'm mm-hmm. kind of a live and let live person. But some people might say, well, you know, these are people who just like to have sex and they're using this as a way to glorify it or make it more than it is or wrap it around spirituality. I'm sure you've run into that. What is your mm-hmm. response or do you even care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a knee jerk reaction to that, I do care. I care deeply. I care deeply about the people who look down on sex and think, oh, it's, you know, oh, if they have the judgment, oh, you're just sex addicted and you're trying to make more of it. I feel sad for people who can't see how magical and ecstatic and potential sex actually is. You know, I actually want to share with the world that you are sitting on gold, like that sex can be such an enlivening and enriching aspect of life, and all of the shame and the guilt and the fear that's conditioned on top of it keeps you away from your power and your potential.
Another thing people might think, well, you know, this is for, you know, 25-year-old people who, you know, have rock hard abs and you know, they're in the you know, at their peak, their physical peak. You know, that's who it's for. I'm too old for that or whatever. I'm assuming that you consider this a lifelong pursuit. I mean, once you've reached adulthood, a lifelong pursuit.
Absolutely. I mean, sex, this idea of, you know, what our bodies are supposed to look like or the concept of sex, see, that's all consumeristic, like propaganda, as far as I'm concerned. What you'll find in the 20 authors who've contributed to this book is that we're all ages, sizes, shapes. We have a woman in here, Lori Handlers, who's celebrating her 70th birthday. Deborah Taj Annapol, who's one of my mentors, who's no longer with us, but her chapter is in the book. She was, you know, also an elder, and her erotic orientation shifted as after menopause, she started learning how to make love more to the earth and eco-sexuality. Like, you know, she talks about the maturing of the sexual cycle and how much richer and deeper it is as we grow older and wiser. So yeah, it has nothing to do with the body type or age.
Now, you've used the phrase cultivating or the word cultivating several times. Mm-hmm. Now, is cultivating equal more? Is it equaling better? Is it equaling a greater emotional connection, all of the above and more? When you mean cultivating, what do you mean?
All of the above, Jim. Great listening. This term, I like to think of us like gardeners, right? So if life is a garden, what are you growing? What are you feeding? What are you putting your attention on? And so when we cultivate, whether it's a spiritual practice or a relationship, we're attending to it. And that sometimes means you're nurturing and growing it, but also can be you're trimming it and you're pruning it, you know, so that it's well tended to.
That makes sense. Now, in terms of the people that are in this book, how did you talked about some of them already, but how did that selection process go, and how did you decide what areas you wanted to cover?
Yeah, so that's a fun question, because I am such a people person. I'm fascinated with people's stories. And every time, you know, like I said, everybody's got a story of a mystical experience in lovemaking that doesn't necessarily make them a sex shaman, but this book is to give permission that everybody has a capacity to practice, you know, sexual shamanism. And I was looking for leaders and teachers and healers who were well on the path, who's like, this is their work in the world. This is their dharma. And I chose in this volume, and I actually see this book being a, you know, series, multi-volume series. But in this first volume, I went to the people who in the International School of Temple Arts, we are a collection of, you know, guides, healers, witches, teachers, you know, it's like a lot of different identities, but, I found several people's stories that just touched me or shocked me, some of them. And I felt like the world has to hear this. And by hearing the differences between each of these stories, it would give permission to the reader to go, oh, my story doesn't have to look like anyone else. You know, we've got a runway model, you know, in there who is a sex shaman. We've also got a priest who was, you know, excommunicated and defrocked. And there's also a, you know, there's second generation shamans in there. And I mean, it's just a huge range to say, this can look a lot of different ways. What's your story?
And is there one, I mean, I'm sure there are multiple, but is there one anecdote that you particularly gravitate toward or appreciate where someone maybe was practicing a life not conversant with this kind of a life and they made a change and it's enriched their life? I'm sure there was more than one.
Yeah, I think that's part of the theme is like we come into this world and we have this certain like narrative, the standard narrative. Janine, for example, she was an aerobics instructor in a small town in Australia. And then there's this moment of awakening where you just recognize that something bigger wants to live through you. This is a very common experience, you know, in the awakening of every shaman. It's like, whoa, I'm making a break with who I thought I was. And in touch with this bigger force that comes through, takes over. And now Janine, she leads these women's retreats that are womb journeys. And, you know, she's the one I mentioned, really in touch with her witchy power and magic. And she's still doing it in this little town in Australia where she grew up and everybody knew her as, you know, super square and, you know, even conservative. And she's just like, transformed her life and pretty much transformed the area as well.
Now, how I mean, how, this is kind of an odd question, but how many sex shamans are there, or how many people you think follow this practice? Is it something that's growing? I looked a little bit at a YouTube video that you did about the book, and you said the original title was something like Secret Lives of Sex Shamans. Is this something people tend to keep hidden?
I don't know whether they're hiding it or it's hidden to those who aren't looking for it. You know, I'm certain there's people for lots of legal and, or, you know, political reasons that have a deeper practice with sexual shamanism that don't talk about it. But I think once you awaken to this, like once you read the book or hear this, hear this interview, you'll start seeing that it's more prevalent than you think. So, so a lot of the occult arts, occult means hidden, are just beneath the surface of society. So you don't see it until you've kind of awakened to it. And then you realize, oh, it's everywhere. And so the question of how many is innumerable. Like I can't give you any statistic. I don't think we're, you know, nobody's on the sense, what do they call it? The census when they come to your door and ask you what you're, they don't ask, are you a sex shaman on that? So there's no way to count.
That's
fine. So unknown numbers, but more than you would think, because the school, the mystery school that I work with, the International School of Temple Arts, is in 44 countries. And I mean, I'm one of the 13 lead facilitators, and we're doing, you know, dozens of trainings per year, in each of us are. And so it's really quite, like abundant. It's really in high demand right now, the work that we're doing. We train a spiritual, sexual, shamanic experience, and it awakens people to this path.
Now in the book, I believe you talk about sacred sexual storytelling. What is sacred sexual storytelling?
Well, it's the process by which the book was written, but it's a challenge to you, the reader, right? So the idea is everybody's got the story of their sex life, the story of their evolution through, you know, what are your sexual awakenings and insights and ahas, because we've all been on a journey. And the storytelling part is to be able to see the thread of how you've grown, you know, from that first pre-puberty moment when you were like in the dark and questioning, and then when you made various revelations, and you know, how, what is your relationship to what you've been told and taught and educated, and how are you applying that? And so it's sort of like an opportunity to come out, whether you're gay or straight or, like I said, monogamous or poly, it doesn't matter. But coming out with your sexual story is it's a personal growth process.
And one thing that's obstructing this kind of process, I would think, would be shame. Mm-hmm. Where does shame come into play here in dispelling that shame?
So it's like, do you want the long answer or the short answer, Jim?
Whatever you feel like giving.
Okay, so I'm going to trust you've got some intelligent listeners, and I'm going to say that there's, you know, it's easy to shame bash and say, okay, like, we're in this era where we don't want to do slut shaming. We want to give people permission to be fully expressed sexually. And we know there's a lot of cultural shame, but there's also a healthy shame. And so, you know, there's this dance of shame is a tool that society and civilization has used to keep people from being, you know, sex obsessed and sex addicted and irresponsible with their sexuality. Like, shame has a light side to it. It keeps people appropriate. And then, you know, when we say someone is shameless, we're saying, you know, they have no shame. And of course I don't advocate that someone be absolutely shameless. You want to have, just like you know, you'd be a psychopath if you didn't have any shame. But what I do feel is really inhibiting to your full expression and your self-realization is the degree to which we internalize messages and actually do a lot of unhealthy shaming on ourselves about we should, or, you know, this is wrong, or and everybody's had a different degree of shame from the mother, father, church, state, you know, put on them about their sexuality. But no one shames us nearly as much as we shame ourselves. You know, we take those messages and we run with it. So a big part of the awakening to your sexual potential is to unlearn the social shaming, but then also divorce your own critic that is constantly reinforcing that shame. And meanwhile, having discernment to still be appropriate and sensitive to what is healthy shame.
And another thing is that, and I think this is where maybe some of the lines, some people may misinterpret them, or maybe I could see somebody who is unscrupulous taking advantage of something and maybe making unwanted advances. I think that when you're talking about this, you have to be clear. You're talking about consenting adults and somebody who wants to participate in this willingly, because as we know from the Me Too movement, there's far too much going on where people are being asked to do things and coerced to do things that are against their will. So I think that's an important part of the message as well, right?
That's a foundational piece. Absolutely. As a kind of prerequisite to the path, it's deep training in sensitivity to not just informed consent, which is really important that people know what they're consenting to, but congruent consent, because a lot of times people will say yes when some part of them means no. And congruent consent is like, all parts of you have to really be on board to go on, you know, various journeys, you know, sexual journeys, and that without consent, you can't access the magic and the power of what's possible in this on this path.
And here's another question that comes to mind, because it strikes me among a lot of people, maybe not all people, that sex and love kind of get all mushed together. And especially if people are pursuing various partners, one of the sticky wickets of that, I would think, I mean, I'm a monogamous person and I plan on being that way until I move on to the next plan. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I understand that's not for everybody, and that's fine. I mean, again, I'm Mr. Mm-hmm. Live and Let Live, consenting adults, live and let live, do what you want. But one thing in that kind of a relationship, polyamorous or something like that, that I would think would be a difficulty would be jealousy and, you know, maybe two people, you know, who are new to the relationship and they have this tremendous experience and it's just exciting and it's new and maybe they mistake that for, it would seem to get very complicated to me, but mm-hmm. that's just my perception. Maybe, you know, that could be completely wrong. How do you guard against that sort of thing?
So there's a couple of different questions in here and they're really juicy ones, Jim. I hear, but there's an assumption of how do we guard against the complications? And this is not a path of least effort. This is not an uncomplicated, simple path. I would say that, first of all, love and sex, you know, are deeply connected, you know, that they're, it is important to deepen into, this isn't just a sexual path. This is a path of the heart and like really opening to the depths of relating. And And in the depths of relating, we're going to start encountering our insecurities and our vulnerabilities and our tenderness. And we're also going to encounter our possessiveness and our, you know, like fear of loss. And so as all those things, which are typically labeled jealousy, begin to arise, instead of saying, oh, this path isn't for me, or I'm not going to do these things, or I'm not going to go so deep. Instead, it's like, how do I increase my emotional intelligence and my emotional sensitivity and deepen my personal growth so that I can actually handle more of my vulnerabilities and process more of my insecurities? And so it's all part of the path. Like, jealousy is really a teacher. You know, when one is wanting to awaken sexually, you want to embrace the full spectrum of feelings. And jealousy is a very human feeling that we have to contend with and learn from and, you know, hopefully grow from. So it's not a simple, let's try to avoid that. It's more like, let's embrace it and see what enlightenment comes from, you know, the shining the light on the deepest, darkest shadows.
As we said, there's a number of contributors here, and you're one of them. You have your own section called Dancing Between Dimensions. Kind of give us a little preview of that section, and what is exactly dancing between dimensions?
We're all multidimensional beings. You know, it's easy and obvious. We started the interview out by saying, well, maybe sex is just chemistry. Well, chemistry is one dimension of sex, right? It's this physical, neurological response. We're also emotional beings. We're also psychological. You know, sex has this whole fantasy, imaginative dimension, as well as a spiritual dimension. And we're all operating on these different dimensions all the time. And part of what shamanism is, being able to have one foot in the manifest, the physical reality, and one foot in the unseen, you know, realm of idea and inspiration and, you know, divination. And so the dance between those is really the, you know, where this work begins. And as a preview to that chapter, I had a nervous breakdown after this reality show that we did. I had just a kind of what would be a midlife crisis experience of my entire world falling apart. And this is, you know, not my first sexual awakening. This is just when everything fell apart. And it was almost physiological, like looked like I had neurotoxins and seizures, and, you know, I thought I was going to die. And what awoke for me in that experience was how important my physiology is. You know, you can go deep, wide into alternate realities and other realms, but if you don't have the strong physical constitution to really keep you grounded in this world, then you're going to lose it. So I had to relearn to rebuild myself from the ground up. And, you know, I'm happy to say now, maybe 5 or 6 years later, that I feel like a new species, you know, healthy and vibrant and radiant, and good sleep, exercise, diet, all those physical practices are well in place so that I can reach other higher dimensions. Because the physical one is really solid.
You said something interesting before and kind of chuckled, but I could see where it would be true that this is not the easiest path. Why is it the mm-hmm. one that you've chosen? And even after that, why do you think it's the one that's suited to you? Why have you, you know, the road less traveled? Why have you decided mm-hmm. to travel that road?
I wish I could say that it was, you know, my decision and I had some reason, you know, why kind of begs that, like, what's the reason? And it's transrational, you know, this path and it sounds cliche, but it really did pick me. And I don't have another choice. I mean, I could try to take a 9-to-5 job, but I'd be terrible at it. This is what I was made for. It's hard to share why, but I can say there were signposts on the path that said, you know, veer off into the uncharted. And that's actually true of all of the shamans that I interviewed, is that all of them at various times in their life kept seeing signs that were pulling them more towards sexual shamanism. And it became an inevitability where they couldn't go back into, you know, their, I won't say normal life, but I'll say ordinary. They couldn't go back to ordinary life. They were just pulled into the extraordinary path of sexual shamanism.
Well, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show and explaining this to us. It's something different, but fascinating. And I really appreciate your time today talking about sex shamans, true stories of sacred sexuality and awakening. Kamala Devi, where can people find the book and more information about everything you do?
So we just released on Amazon, so you can get the book there. Inner Traditions is our publisher, and they're offering a discount right now, which is great. And I'd love to stay in touch with you if you want to find me at kamaladevi.com.
Well, again, a great discussion, and we really appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us on the other side.
Thanks, Jim. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. And yes, it's something very different, but very, very interesting and food for thought. We hope that you enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.